horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Hour two at the races, and Jay Pridman going to join us and go through a really intense opening weekend for Santa Anita. And, of course, the intensity ratcheted by the postponement of opening weekend last week. Jay, good morning.
Steve, how are you?
Excellent. And, I waited until this morning to print up the Sunday card, and you better get tied on here today through Sunday.
Yes, no, lots of stakes racing, lots of winning your ins to the Breeders' Cup, so it'll be a pretty frenetic weekend, like you were just alluding to, you know, because we didn't race last week going to the fire situation and the smoke and whatnot. There were several stakes that were postponed to this weekend, so it just added to the glut of races that were already scheduled. So it'll be a pretty intense and fun weekend.
Well, let's not waste time and let's dive into this and hit the categories, because there'll be West Coast contributions across the board to Breeders' Cup categories. Coming out of virtually everything. And, you know, the Eddie D has been on the docket now for, I don't know, but I bet you it feels like 8-9 years maybe. But the renamed Sherwood Chillingworth, really kind of a nice nod to Chili and his years of dedication to, you know, the industry and the Oak Tree Association.
Yeah, no, it's nice that they honored Chili. It would have been nicer if they'd have done this while he was still alive. He was certainly deserving of it prior to his death. But it's nice that there's an acknowledgement that Oak Tree did so much for Santa Anita over the years, and hopefully this is maybe the start of a new trend of maybe going, you know, they went back to the future with the Gold Cup. It's now called the Hollywood Gold Cup, which I thought was a really classy move to go back to that. And hopefully this newer management at Santa Anita, which came up with that idea and, you know, and came up with this idea, will continue to make more nods to the past and acknowledge those kinds of contributions. So it's a promising development.
Well, the category, fillies and mares, going 6.5 on the main, and the Eddie D turf sprint had been down the hill, but we continue to deal with, you know, keeping things on the level when it comes to the turf sprinting. Don't know the status of the, you know, this new shoot that is going to offer some options when it comes to configurations, but 5.5 in the Eddie D, some familiar names, including the return of Wild Man Jack.
Yeah, I mean, well, he just ran on the dirt at at Del Mar. So it's not like he's coming off of a layoff or anything like that. You know, he didn't draw that well, and there's quite a bit of speed in the race, so I'm kind of looking for horses that can sit and finish, and even though it's a three-year-old against older, I think El Tigre Terrible has got a big chance in this race. You know, Peter Miller also has Grit and Curiosity, whose one turf sprint was, it was last year at Kentucky Downs, but it was a good effort. But another horse in here that I think has got a really big chance, because he can go to the lead or he can sit, is the horse is drawn outside, Big Runner for Victor Garcia. He's just a really top-notch turf sprinter. He loves Santa Anita's turf, and he's drawn well. The race comes up good for him, so I'm kind of focusing on the outside two in this race, 6 and 7.
I like it, and 3-1 on Big Runner, and looks like you got a nice freshening. Didn't even bother to, he went down to Del Mar to work, but you know, focused on this and comes in hot with a pair of bullets in the holster. And
Something must have happened to him.
Del Mar.
early at Del Mar because he didn't work from July 15 to August 23rd. So it looks like he had a hiccup, and now they've gotten him back on a nice, strong work pattern. And it might be for the better anyway because he just loves this race, this turf course.
The Eddie D today, 6:30 Eastern. And should mention Mr. Vargas, too, for Samantha Siegel. Last seen last fall in this race and away since. And Samantha's got actually been winning some races steadily with her Midwestern string and New York. And I guess I should pull up how many starters she's got. I kept seeing JMS every you know, every time I was looking, I kept noticing Samantha's runners. So Mr. Vargas in there.
Yeah, I like this horse. I just think the race doesn't come up well for him today, coming off a layoff and with all the speed in the race. But if I know it's unfortunate people still can't go to the track, but if you're watching the simulcast, take a look at this horse. He's about the biggest horse out here. He's just a tank. So he's just kind of an interesting physical horse to look at. Did you want to go through the Chillingworth?
Absolutely. Go ahead, move back to the Chili.
Yeah. Not the strongest field we've ever seen. I'll be interested to see if they go today with Hangistar, or she's in the Zenyatta as well. I think this is actually a better spot for her. I think the turn back would suit her well. And so I hope that she goes in this spot. And if she does, I give her a big chance to pull off a mild upset. Certainly Amuse ran well in the Rancho Bernardo, and she's chased sneaking out her last two dirt races, so she's obviously good form. Then I would think Quahira will probably just be favored off of her her comeback win, but this is her stakes debut, and she's a quality filly, but I don't know that she's the price that I think she'll be in relation to a couple of the others in here. I think might be askew. So I'd use Quahira, but I'm hoping if Hangistar runs, I would use her and Amuse more stronger on my tickets.
Nice. The two stakes actually kick off the late pick five, and there's also a first level allowance that goes as the ninth in here as well, and gives rise to the Saturday card. And this one, I think, right from the get go, they're not waiting into the action. We go right to the Unzip Me on Saturday, Jay, and 12:30. Pacific Post for the 11 race card and the 3-year-old fillies turf sprinting.
Right. So the horse for Phil D'Amato, Blue Sky Baby, I thought ran real well when she came off her layoff in her most recent start. Bulletproof One is just so fast. She's going to be, I think, very salty in here. And then I'll give you just a complete bomber in here who I'm going to use, who I think's got a look at a giant price, is Powerful Attraction, who's drawn on the outside. She's probably going to be the longest shot in the race. But my angle on her is that her form is dirtied up. Her one grass race was going long on turf, and she didn't run. She hasn't run since then, and that race was, nearly a year ago. So obviously she had something go awry in that race. And, she showed in her debut that she runs well fresh. So if you, look at her as a horse who runs well fresh, and if you're willing to give an excuse for that one grass race, which was going long, and from which she had, lots of time off afterwards, she's an intriguing horse to at least get into the gimmicks, if not pull off a giant upset. So I'm going to go three deep in there. I'm going to use Blue Sky Baby, Bulletproof One, and I'm also going to hope, Powerful Attraction is, obviously she'd be the best horse because she's going to be far and away the biggest price of those three.
Absolutely. The three-year-old fillies on the turf going short give way to the two-year-old fillies going long on the main. In the chandelier, it goes as the third, so 4:35 Eastern, 1:35 Pacific, and all eyes on Princess Noor.
And deservedly so. I mean, she's won both her starts. She won them both just breezing home. And, you know, let's face it, this field and even the American Pharoah, both these races didn't come up very deep. The two-year-olds on the East Coast, I think right now, from a depth standpoint, are far stronger, and I think there's more strength at the top as well. And Princess Noor, John White's got her 2-5 on the morning line, which is, I think, indicative of what, that's deserved. And I think it's a reflection of how good she is and how relatively little she has to beat tomorrow.
The group of five, three from Baffert, Cassie has got Make Mischief, and Balthus Miss Costa Rica. The two-year-olds, male versions on the turf, and this is the Speakeasy and group of nine. And this was a group, Jay, that I kind of looked cross-eyed at. Nobody really kind of jumped at me.
Yeah, you're right. It's really a challenging race to come up with. It's a win and you're in for the juvenile turf sprint. And there's no race like this that's restricted to fillies. So you've got a couple of fillies in here along with the males. You've got horses shipping in from all over the place, from Ireland, from Saratoga by way of Kentucky in the case of the requisite Wesley Ward 2-year-old. Turf sprint entrant. You got not one, not two, but three first-time starters from Tug O'Neill's barn. All of them drew the inside post. And you've got a horse that Sadler and the Ronis brothers bought privately off a debut win at Tampa back in May. He was running for the first time since then. And Wi-Fire was privately purchased by Gary Barber and now goes to Peter Miller after winning a maiden race at Del Mar. It's an impossible race. If you can afford to do it, I would say buy it. Obviously, Commander Kai is on paper, the one to beat. Off of a good debut race, and then unlucky to lose, and then came back and won easily, and certainly deserves to be favored. But I don't know that he's a layup in here, and I'm told that the Great One has trained very well for his debut of the O'Neill newcomers. But I unlike you, it's a really inscrutable race.
We'll do some pedigree work overnight and try to figure out what I can maybe latch on to for fun. There's a second level allowance that is mid card that. Then gives rise to the stakes sequence of the Rodeo Drive, the American Pharoah, the John Henry, and the Awesome Again. And, Jay, this is really, this is nice. I mean, the sequence, there's some, stars on display, obviously, particularly when we get to the feature. But in each race, there's some horses people are going to be familiar with. What's the MO here? And anybody that I know that United is going to be prominent on everybody's multi tickets, but let's start with the Rodeo Drive and work our way to the Awesome Again.
Right. So the Rodeo Drive, one of two races where they will, like the John Henry, they will come down the hill and cross the dirt. So which they have continued to do for races at a mile and a quarter and a mile and a half and whatnot. So maybe there's a chance they can run sprints again down there. This could flop a number of different ways. I just think these horses kind of take turns beating each other, Steve. But I do think the form of the Yellow Ribbon is the most significant, with Fotocita and Tanahutu running 1-2 in a real close finish. And I think they're the top two in this race as well. Tanahutu came back and won against a slightly softer group, but she's obviously vastly improved. Her three races since being claimed are terrific. She's fired every time, and Bodicita's came back off of that little freshening and won the yellow ribbon. I think both will be fine going out to to a mile and a quarter. But you know, there's obviously several others in here who have good chances. You know, you can't knock Lady Prance a lot. She's certainly deserving of support in here. So, even Maxim Rate is going to cut back. But you know, she's gotten really good this year. She's come back, you know, a lot better than she left last year. So, she's one of a number of good mounts that Saez is going to be on. He's out here all weekend, primarily for Baffert.
Sure.
But he picked up a lot of really good mounts. So it's a competitive race. I'm not sure how these horses stack up in terms of the divisional leaders. You
right.
Know, the Beau Recall and Newspaper of Record at all, but it's a competitive race. And but I like the two that are coming out of the yellow ribbon.
I just want to ask about a personal favorite a little bit. There's actually a couple of horses in here that I've got affection for. Mucho Unusual, though. You know, she's now multiple grade one placed, and she always gives a solid account of herself. I kind of waiting for her to kind of bust through after last summer where, you know, she really... That San Clemente win, it felt like that was, you know, kind of a coming out party. And not that she's underperformed, but she's sort of lacking that next step.
Yeah, I would agree. I was disappointed in her race last time out in the Solana Beach. I thought she, you know, that was hers for the taking. It was a significant class drop.
Yeah.
She had four rivals. She was 1-2. And she only finished third with... out much excuse as I saw it. So this to me looks like a tougher field.
Well, I'll keep an eye on her. That's Big Score's little sister, and I liked her from early on. The American Pharoah, and as opposed to the group, I suppose as opposed to Princess Noor, there is not the, you know, the heavy head per se in here. Maybe the heaviest head is a maiden.
It's not. Again, this is just not a strong field. Spielberg is the horse you're referencing. He's run well both of his races behind Dr. Scheibel, who won the Del Mar Futurity, but. Brad Free reported the other day that he's done for the year. He wasn't going to run in this race anyway. They were originally going to point for the Breeders' Cup, but he's done for the year. You know, I thought the Del Mar Futurity, Steve, was just an okay race. It wasn't a strong race. The Fig is very moderate. So, yes, Spielberg's on paper looks probably like the horse to beat, but he's going to be going two turns for the first time, and you know, if there's others in here who do well going two turns, they can beat him. I don't think he's a world beater. I think he's a nice horse, but I don't think he's a world beater. And I think the people who have notable exception were very shrewd to ship in here. This is the horse who won nicely on the synthetic at Arlington, but he's got a dirt pedigree. He's by Street Sense out of an AP Indy mare, and they've breezed him a couple of times on dirt at Keeneland, including a best of the morning work, his last work before he came out here. I see no reason why he can't be effective against this group. And I think it's a very smart move to come out here. If you look at this field, it's like, who do you have to beat in here? So I'm intrigued by him. If he takes the dirt, I see no reason why he can't be a major factor against this group.
Well, and that mare, that Poco Mas, this is a brother of Tatters to Riches, I'm sure you remember, from a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Tatters to Riches was a really promising horse out here, unfortunately, bowed a tendon, but he got off to a really good start and then got hurt. But he was a high-priced purchase that Jeff Mullins trained. I thought that horse had a lot of talent. He just unfortunately, you know, suffered an injury that he just couldn't get over the hump from.
And I'm just looking. What did John White 7-2 notable exception. And I guess touchdown Brown, I guess, of the stretchouts, the Becerra runner down inside with Hernandez, okay, takes the blinkers off after a second in the I'm smoking downstate. There's your American Pharaoh group. That takes us to the John Henry, where United, you know, feels like I'm not a guy that says free bingo square, but feels like it's his race.
Probably, but Originaire could have and should have beaten him last time in the Del Mar Handicap. He had a really tough trip. I didn't think he was going to be as effective going out to a mile and three-eighths that day, but he ran a winning race. And he ran a super race at this exact trip in the Whittingham. Mile and a quarter on grass was, you know, one of his best performances. And I think he can give United all he can handle. So I'm doubling the race. I don't think it's a complete layup for United. He's certainly the horse to beat. He's, you know, but I think Originaire is close to his equal, and the price will be the discrepancy in the price will be worth using him to me.
I like it, and I'll bring up as another alternative, Next Shares. It was kind of another horse that I
off
have.
What? I'm going to play. I was channeling my inner Andy Serling.
Your inner Andy, right? He.
Yeah. How? What's to like off him recently?
Well, he generally. Well, you can say that he runs well there. You know, of the recent, you know, the trip to Kentucky for the Maker's Mark and which was a fiasco. And you know, I always forgive, you know, Kentucky Downs. Not every horse appreciates that journey. So getting back home and you know, maybe the fairly leisurely pace that he's going to encounter here, I just Saez getting aboard, I think I'll have him. I think Saez will probably get him, you know, into the race a little earlier. I don't know. He is seven now. I don't know. Maybe he can't run anymore. There's my inner Andy. But I find myself including him on tickets a lot, Jay.
Well, if he wins, then you'll have spent more money than me, but you will still be alive.
I love it. That gets us to the really an interesting scenario in the awesome again, where you know, you had plenty of conversation with Baffert this week, and Improbable and Maximum Security bang heads in here, and it's a race with. Something we don't see that often. Most of the horses involved want to be on or near.
Right, and I think that's going to actually benefit Improbable. I mean, he looks like the horse who's going to, on paper, get the better trip here, because he definitely can sit and finish. I just think he's a much better horse than people realize right now. He's a serious horse. He's a better horse at four than he was at three. His only loss was against Tom's de Todd after being parked four wide the whole way in his first start off of a long layoff at Oaklawn. You know, he beat Tom's de Todd last time. Granted, Tom's de Todd had his excuse last time in the Whitney. So but be that as it may, I thought Improbable ran a terrific race in the Whitney. He's continued to train extremely well, and I just think I think on reputation, Maximum Security is better. I don't think they're very far apart, and I think Improbable's got a big chance to beat him tomorrow.
It certainly, you know, when you look at you know, the presence of Sleepy Eyes Todd and you know, knowing that Maximum Security and Saez, I mean, what they're going to do, and then down inside, here's Samantha with the Take the 101, who really only knows one way. So he Improbable gets to set up shop and move at will. And I suppose mid-court, What's Espinoza's approach, do you think, given the other three pace parties?
Well, I just think that horse needs to be in the race, and he wasn't last time, and they let Maximum Security walk the dog. So I would think they'd want to put him into the race. That doesn't mean he's going to be going head-to-head with Maximum Security or take the 101, but I think he needs to be on their hip and into the race, and he just wasn't last time. But one of the big concerns with him, and it still is a little bit with Improbable, too, is, you know, both of them tend to act up in the gate. And, you know, if you press the button at the wrong time, you know, if they happen to lean back or something right as the button's pushed, it can obviously compromise either of them. So that's obviously something to watch, because they both have had and continue to have gate issues. You know, you remember Improbable, even he was kind of getting goofy in the gate just before they kicked it in the Whitney. He ended up breaking fine, Tom Zatot didn't. But if it had been, you know, the button had been hit 2 seconds earlier, it might have been the other way around. It's a fine line there. And mid-court's kind of the same. I mean, he's had gate problems in the past. He didn't last time, but, you know, he did in the Gold Cup earlier this year. He was terrible leaving the gate, and he was never in the race after that. So, but he needs to be in the race. He's just better when he's put into the race early, and I would think after what happened last time, there will be different tactics employed tomorrow.
The Awesome Again and the participants, no matter who wins, you're going to get participants in the Breeders' Cup Classic out of this. And it seems like every start involving Maximum Security is a happening. So this will be included. 8 o'clock Saturday night for the feature, the Grade One Awesome Again. And then Jay on Sunday, come back with more. And I don't know how much work you've had a chance to do since the draw yesterday, but the Zenyatta and the Sprint and what's the third? The Zenyatta, the Sprint, and
Tokyo City.
The here we go.
Tokyo City.
How could I miss the Tokyo City?
How could you forget the Tokyo City?
Quick survey of Sunday Fighting Mad.
Well, I mean, the Zenyatta looks like it's Fighting Mad's race to lose. She's in the best form, and there's nobody to go with her early. She's controlled. She completely controls the pace of that race. I don't see how she can lose that race. It's just it looks like a complete layup for her.
No,
that's a player's pick five bingo free squares for me. I don't see any other scenario.
I hear you. Couple of some decent racing in between stakes, and then the Sprint Championship, where Collusion Illusion faces Elders.
Well, he did last time. I mean,
that's right. That's right. He did downstate. That's right.
Yeah, and he got his first Grade One. And you know, the significant thing I thought of the last race is that in some of his previous races, he'd had kind of ideal trips where he was drawn outside and he kind of sat that stalking outside trip, and in this race he had to run into some dirt and knife inside, and it proved critical because, you know, Lexingtonian really fired that day, and the trip helped Collusion Illusion. So I don't think the rail draw is the best place for him, but it's encouraging that he showed last time that if he needs to come through inside, he's going to be just fine doing it. And you know, he's never lost sprinting, so he's certainly the horse to beat in here. But you know, obviously CZ Rocket has found a new lease on life and is super sharp right now. And I thought Flagstaff ran a terrific race behind CZ Rocket in the Pat O'Brien last time. So even though it's a small field, I think any of those three are win candidates.
The Tokyo City, the other stake, and then I want to mention the Philly two-year-olds that go early on the card. There's a big sibling in there. But Tokyo City, mile and a half on the main track, and you got some chug-along types and combatant. What else can you say? Although, tis a magician. It feels like Mandela's trying to get a handle on what he might do well going forward.
Yeah, he won nicely last time. That wasn't the strongest first-level allowance field, but, you know, he's been a horse that they've liked, and he's been kind of slow to come around. But look, so is Tisnow, his sire. And there's a very good chance that this horse is going to continue to progress with racing and as he gets older. So he's not an impossible horse in here at all. He's certainly a good jump-up candidate because he's probably a horse who's continuing on the improve, even though he's running against better horses than he's run against in the past. He is an improving type. You know, I don't know what to make of Combatant. His last few races have all just been awful, and he might be, as Gary Young says, on the other side of midnight. He won the Santa Anita Handicap here, but he's been dreadful since then. And I don't think that's overstating things. I mean, he's beaten, five horses out of his 26 rivals in his last three starts. So, I don't have a good feel for this group. I think they're just okay horses, and it's just who can last going a mile and a half. And I think your angle on Tis a Magician is as good as any in here, but it's just a hard race for me to get super excited about, and it might be. It's probably what's going to keep me from playing the late pick four or pick five. I'll probably be much more involved early because, like I said, I think Fighting Mad's a layup, and you were referencing that second race where, there's probably another bingo free space in there with Flash Magic, the Good Magic's sister. So I'm probably more interested in that. It's seem like you can turn the pick five into a pick three.
Yeah, and Flash Magic was the filly he was referencing, the Pioneer of the Nile, out of Glinda the Good. Good Magic for those. And, Jay, other than that, a couple of notes aside Preakness things, and also you got the word from Baffert that circulated that Gamine was going to restrict to one turning, which really adds the extra intrigue to the filly and mare sprint at Keeneland, because it is a really good lineup. And I wrote off the heels of your post, I circulated your article and said, for a division that had no real definition at the beginning of the year, it's going to end up being one of the most anticipated cup races of the weekend.
Oh, that's for sure. I don't think it was a surprise that that's what they're going to do with her for the rest of this year. I mean, she's clearly at this point in her life better around one turn, which I think has been something that's been said quite often in this forum over the last.
Back when
let's run her in the Kentucky Derby started right after the Acorn, and I was like, clear Jets folks. This is a much more appropriate spot for her. But you're right, from a larger level, it makes that race just so interesting with, see her and Serengeti Empress go at it, and Belle's the One is coming off that nice win over Serengeti Empress, the thriller last time out at Churchill. It's just a really good group of fillies at the top of that division. Makes for a really, really, really good race.
We're a week out from Preakness, and obviously next week we'll, you know, we'll actually have all week. Monday is the draw, so we'll have all week to kind of digest and anticipate. Field lost since we talked last. Tis the law bypassing, which, you know, that seemed to be in the offing pretty quickly post Derby. Any thoughts as that field continues to kind of morph a little bit, waiting for Pletcher decisions and so forth?
Yeah, I'm just really, you know, obviously Authentic's going to be the focal point of the race, but you know, it was unfortunate what happened with Art Collector not being able to run in the Derby, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him get his chance at this level. You know, he deserved to be in the Derby, and it was just unfortunate timing that he had that hiccup when it happened. If it had happened 2 weeks earlier, he would have made the race. But unfortunately, it was just terrible timing, and you know, I'm hoping he gets his chance. I saw tape of his last work. I thought it was outstanding. So it looks to me like he's, you know, right back on the beam, and he'll have one more breeze, and then head on, as will Authentic, and certainly Thousand Words will get his chance again after rearing up in the paddock and having to be scratched on Derby Day. So, and just that whole card's going to be good. They've just loaded so much onto it. It's going to be a pretty terrific day of racing. You know, with DeFrancis Dash and the Black Eyed Susan and what's now called the Dinner Party. The grass race, now called the Dinner Party. So I think they're running like, I don't
12.
know.
12 stakes,
12
I think.
Stakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun card.
Jay Privman, everybody. DRF Privman. Jay will be watching and absolutely involved the next 3 days as Santa Anita gets going, and the postponement only really added to the depth and the quality of these 3 days. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, it should be a really fun weekend out here.
Jay Privman, folks, what's on the agenda for, I suppose, a very busy Thoroughbred LA tomorrow?
Yeah, no, we'll obviously recap the stuff from today and then have a pretty deep dive previewing the whole weekend. It'll be very Santa Anita heavy and deservedly so show tomorrow with our usual cast of characters, including Bob Ike and John Lindo. So we'll have a fun morning tomorrow from 9 to 10 on AM 830 KLAA.
How can people listen online?
ThoroughbredLA.com.
There
from,
you go.
9 o'clock Pacific, noon Eastern.
Perfect. Perfect. Lead you right into all the action. Jay Privman, everybody. Jay, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Have a good weekend, Steve.
You too. We're going to stay right here. Marcus Hirsch actually going to join us, and so we have the three. We have the trifecta of Mary Rampolini, Jay Privman, Marcus Hirsch. Then we pause, and we'll get Mike Welsh late on the back end. So Marcus is going to join us. And we'll get kind of a variety of opinions from Marcus. Of course, when I sent him a note this morning, I said, "How about game plan? You know, style. You know." And for those that haven't utilized game plan, it's a multi-page, multi-track analysis. You know, there's been actually a couple of, you know, that's been around actually a few years, but there's also been the product that Mike Beer has been working on and this summer introduced that I've tried to reach Beer and haven't been able to connect with him, but they're doing a wagering strategy product, him and David Aragona. And I want to get one or the other or both and have them, you know, kind of flesh it out, because it looks really good. And it's the area, you know, so often we talk about the handicapping side, you know, ad infinitum, and don't get to spend as much time about, you know, the ticket building. And it is big. I mean, how many times have we said it? Marcus Hirsch joins us, and I'm sure Marcus would concur. that the wagering strategy and ticket building absolutely has to balance with the handicapping. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning, Steve. I concur.
Yeah, what I was sort of vamping while Casey reached out for you, and I mentioned, you know, that I wrote to you this morning and said, you know, how about some game plan style opinions, and then I explained the new wagering strategy product that David Aragona and Mike Beer have put together, and haven't had a chance to have them on.
Yeah, no, it's more than that. Brad Free does it too.
Yep.
In California, and I'll be doing it during the Keeneland meet. It's just going to be something that is a regular feature, you know, regardless of, I mean, at the major meets.
Yes.
And that, I mean, I guess that can be useful to some extent, but I mean, those are in the end just opinions on like which horses people like, and ultimately, if you're going to do this regularly, I think you have to figure out what works for you, you know, and it really, like, leveraging your opinions is everything.
Exactly.
And it's hard. Imagine being a financial manager, or, you know, there's something that, I mean, you can glean a lot just from experience, but I think you have to also actively pursue solutions and consider the implications of, you know, decisions you make. It's work. It's a lot of work, and it's much harder than, probably even much less satisfying to a lot of people than the process of kind of to parse the form. But I mean, ultimately, utterly necessary.
Let's leverage some opinions then right away. And it's a huge weekend, and obviously these lead-ins and these challenge races and you know, the delayed start to Santa Anita, which just got off with the call with Jay Privman, and we went through all the stakes and more at Santa Anita, but Belmont and Churchill chips in with the ACAC. What's your focus this weekend?
Well, I mean, I actually didn't think that. I thought that for the number of stakes, there were not that many compelling races. And I hate not to cheerlead the way I should probably, but the Vosburgh is not that inspiring, although it is a race that I was looking at in this weekend game plan picture, where I'm asked to pick three races to form a specific opinion about one horse, which is one way of doing things. But yeah, I mean, like the marquee matchup is the two Bavard horses in the Osmond again, which is not a great wagering situation, because it's five horses and three of them that don't appear good enough to win. As much as I enjoy Sleepy Eyes Todd's performances around bull rings, if this race were at Fawner, I think he could easily win. United is a formidable favorite. I don't love him at a short price. No speed in that race. I mean, the Philly and Mayor Turf Vision in California always benefits when people from the East or Midwest, Brad Cox, Chad Brown, George Weaver, whoever it might be, send horses out there for these turf races. The locals, I mean, I can never separate them. I just don't have any clue. I don't think that any of the major players, 2-year-olds, with the exception of Princess Noor, who's going to be odds on and looks incredibly formidable, I don't think those horses are running out there. I'm interested to see what goes down, but I wasn't that taken with the Santa Anita program on Saturday from a multi supposedly important stakes perspective. And the ACAC you mentioned is a really interesting race.
Dive in.
Maybe it's not. Maybe it's Warrior's Charge just wins at a short price. But I'm not sure he has a huge edge on some horses. And I looked up the rail one-turn mile stats at Churchill for the last 10 years, and they're surprisingly okay. I thought that was something that could be a problem. But I don't love that draw for him. And I like Everfest. And just words that I never thought would come out of my mouth. but I mean, in fact, to like expand that, Jack Sisterson could have a quite the weekend. He's got that horse, Notable Exception, in the American Faroa. I think that's that horse's name. Who actually worked in company. They got the same very fast 5/8 clocking at Keeneland, 59, or I don't remember exactly what it was. It was much the fastest work of that morning for whatever that's worth. But to work that 2-year-old against Everfast must say something about the 2-year-old who is an Arlington graduate. But he also has, oh my God, I'm blanking on the horse's name in the Vosburgh. The horse has been around forever. Anyway, we'll get back
yes.
to that.
Oh my gosh. Now you're going to make me draw a blank.
He's drawn the rail, a former Kieran McLaughlin trainer.
Yeah, Timber. True Timber.
True Timber, thank you. Also, I think has a chance in that race. And with Everfast, he ran his best race of the year in the Blame, a one-turn mile at Churchill, just like this race, where he nearly beat Owendale, who surely is Warrior Charge's equal. And I think that, you know, you just toss the turf race that Everfast had. They experimented, and his forego, which was on run under those radical conditions, I thought was just fine, and he is a good draw. So I don't think he's going to be 10-1. I think that some of the odds are a little backwards, like American Anthem. I would swap him as far as morning line odds. He's 5-1. I think Everfast is probably more of a 5-1 shot because you kind of the contendership falls off relatively quickly. But I would take 5-1 on that horse.
I speaking of 5-1, I thought that Eben, Steve Margolis's
I wanted to.
Yeah.
Because I know, I mean, I was pretty high on that horse way back as a 2-year-old. I'm very familiar with his form, and there's no doubt that he's hit a new level, and all credit to Connections. He's on a nice streak, and I liked his last few races. My concern is that he's absolutely maxed out. I don't know that he has anywhere further to go. But I would want more than 5-1 on him, which is plausible. But I wouldn't discourage anyone from going with Eben and Ak-Ak at all.
What I like is that there's seemingly about 2.5 horses that will make, you know, will be part of the pace, and Corey Lannery gets the choice of being either right on it or tucking in right behind it. I made it Warrior's Charge, Bourbon Calling, Eben, and Everfast. 1, 2, 8, 13 for me.
Bourbon Calling, I guess, was one to consider on the rise. I do worry that his improved performance was a function of his taking to the bull ring in Charlestown. But he's plausible. Seems like a classic Ian Wilkes under the radar contender. But yeah, I'm siding with Everfast. I feel decent about that. I think he's going to be there or thereabouts.
The Ak-Ak, also part of the cross-country pick five, as I mentioned, along with the eighth race, which is also 1 mile, fillies and mares, third level allowance. But Ak-Ak will certainly produce a Breeders' Cup.
Dirt mile.
Yeah, dirt mile starter or two.
Yeah. Well, I know Warriors. That's very likely. I agree with you.
Yeah. Well, and ever you mentioned Jack Sisterson, and what's amazing is how he's remade Everfast, and how often.
Well, Ringers.
Yeah, and the dedicated, you know, other than the try and the Maker's
races.
Mark, yeah, the dedicated one turns and you know, sure. At Oakland.
To be fair, you know, I don't know. People get forced into running longer than horses might want just because of the lucrative 3-year-old programs. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I think his Preakness was, you know, was, you know, it wasn't the greatest Preakness ever, but it was. That's the thing I want to see with horses like this. I need some, like, if it were just the Blame, you know, then you'd feel a little like you have less solid footing. But he ran a good. He showed in the Preakness that what his ceiling is. I want to see a credible ceiling and some support that the horse is approaching that, and I see that with him.
By the way, those that heard us with Bo Lane on Wednesday, Bo's the Algorithms colt just went through the ring at Keeneland and fetched 31,000. And I just sent Bo a note. I want to. I imagine that was past reserve. But if you were, I know a lot of people were following 3974 just now. And rooting for Bo to do well. I'm sure just asked him if he was happy with that number. So 31,000. If you wondered what it would have cost you to take him home, and he was gorgeous. If you didn't see him, and the nice long bodied colt, and Bo was kind of doting on him with us the other day, Marcus.
Oh. All right. Well, best of luck to everyone.
couple of other thoughts. Anywhere else?
Well, I mean, I had three races in this racing form segment.
All right, but I know you. You looked at more. Something caught your eye. What did you have to handicap for tomorrow? In terms of cards.
I mean. I thought we were going to talk about the weekend game plan, Steve. I'm serious. Did you not look at what I wrote?
Yes,
and
I guess
I would have probably done that.
Yes, but I was looking to expand beyond anything else that you wanted to.
Well, we haven't even covered the other two races yet.
Oh, all right. Okay, then yes, then continue on that front.
No, you go ahead.
No. I jumped in and I shouldn't have.
Okay. Do you know the other two races?
I'm going back to it now, and because you can't print anything out anymore, which I got to tell you is maddening.
Right. Well, I can. Well, one of them was the Vosburgh, and the other one was the Awesome Again.
Neither there you go.
It's particularly striking in terms.
Well, you
of
talked about the Awesome Again.
Consequence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who do you like? Who do you have? Maximum Security or Improbable?
We talked about it with Jay. The trip that Improbable figures to get is just advantageous, and. You know, with the other at least three vying for, you know, sparring up in front, it just feels like Van Dyke can move at will.
Yeah. I the more I thought about it over the last day, I wonder if Improbable even is favored in this race. I had some post-weekend game plan regret, actually, because, I mean, the whole idea with Maximum Security is the Breeders' Cup Classic early favorite, and he's supposed to be the most likely winner of this race in the betting, but it's become, I mean, I don't know. My idea was that Improbable is considerably more likely winner of the race, and so I thought he could offer a touch of value. I'm no longer certain that's going to be the case. I do love the way Improbable is training, and I think he's a legitimate Breeders' Cup Classic horse. That remains to be determined. In the Vosburgh, you know, I'm not even sure how that race is going to be bet. But I do think because Forenza Fire ran so poorly last time and he hasn't quite got back to his very best pre-Kelly Breen form, that he might get bumped up a couple notches higher than he ought to be, because that horse absolutely loves Belmont. And with a decided lack of true speed in that race, he's going to get the outside pressing stalking trip that he has used to such great advantage before in races like the Vosburgh. He's 7-2 on the line. I think that he could get lower than that. I would definitely take 7-2. It just remains to me to be seen how much Engage gets bet making his first race since the Breeders' Cup.
I am in the same frame of mind with him.
True Timber, I thought, might be sent, and if he gets the lead, I think he's doing better than he has at times. And another horse, as you mentioned, with Sister Sin focusing on one-turn races, with Everfast, he seems to be committed to going shorter rather than longer, cutting back rather than going forward out to a mile again, and that could be effective, although with a horse like True Timber, his ceiling is very well known, and there's not probably a lot of latitude for improvement there. With regard to any other opinions, I handicapped Arlington. That's the only track of my regular, you know, menu that is going on Saturday. Arlington is like has massive purses relative to what we've come to expect. They boosted about another 15% for the last 9 days in the meet, which is the end of the meet. And they had already been raised once before, so I mean, people would be shocked to look at this card and see huge fields running for great purses. I mean, it's what I mean. There was extra money from whatever reason that all got thrown at once into the end of the meet. So good for them. I didn't have anything that I loved. I thought it was a tough card. As far as non-stakes races at other tracks, I am doing some research now for plays that the Racing Form will publish under the regular, like daily game plan product. So I don't really have anything for you in that regard.
That's fine. I know you did the advances. I did mention it to everybody because I hadn't noted all week with all the big cards that were drawn that Prairie Meadows has got the Iowa Festival, as it were, with the Iowa Breds getting there.
Correct. There are seven Iowa Bred Thoroughbred Stakes races. I mean, there are some decent Iowa Breds, and none of the races is bad. It's just that there aren't enough of them, so too many of the fields don't have enough horses for them to be especially appealing from a wagering perspective.
Well, among, you know, just so many cards, we're going to talk to Mike Welch later. Gulfstream's got the Stallion Stakes.
Weather looks iffy there. Am I wrong?
The weather's iffy every single day. It's unbelievable.
Because those two-year-old turf races often are appealing. I looked at those and tried to give them like serious consideration, but I couldn't find much there. And I'm also concerned that if the amount of rain falls that is possible, that those turf races could get taken off.
Yeah. Since you brought up Arlington too, I did want to ask you because I did print out, save that piece the other day last week when you were live tweeting the board meeting and give everybody a glance ahead of where things stand for Arlington.
Oh, well, it was Illinois has a process through which the racetracks have to submit applications for the next year's racing dates by the end of July, and then the monthly racing board meeting in September awards those dates. And that's what they did. It wasn't actually anything that earth-shattering because Cawthorn and Arlington had a two-year agreement covering 2020 and 2021. That was kind of going to govern how things worked. So basically, the schedule for next year looks like what has become the traditional Chicago schedule with a few fewer days. So actually, the main thing was there have been questions, and the Illinois Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association tried to get assurance that Arlington was actually going to run this 2021 meet, especially if things didn't work out. You know, there was coronavirus was ramping back up, and there were problems getting spectators in, so on and so forth. Arlington, I know, has like verbally said they were going to run through 2021, but there have been other statements made, particularly in a shareholders call for Church of Downs Incorporated over the summer by the CEO of CDI, suggesting that was not there was no full commitment to that. Now, there was really nothing the board could do or did do to give assurances to horsemen that that the meet was going to go off as planned. So, I mean, that was kind of left up in the air, and people are just assuming and hoping that it's going to work out. Hawthorne is building a, you know, they're in the process of constructing a casino. And they did get initial approval from the Illinois Gaming Board to go forward with that, and so they intend to have a casino and a sportsbook, as does Fairmont Park in downstate Illinois. But that's not going to really affect, that's not going to have an effect on 2021 per se.
No. No. But it does at least offer, you know, stability and a future, given, you know, with Hawthorne in Chicagoland and downstate with Fairmont, but with the uncertainty surrounding Arlington.
Yeah, I guess it's worth mentioning, Steve, that Arlington will have a stakes schedule, or they say they're going to have a stakes schedule next year. This was a stakes-free meet because the circumstances with everything being shut down in late spring and early summer. There was limited money available for purses, and the decision was made on both sides, although one side, the horsemen, pushed harder than the other, to just dedicate all the available purse money to overnight races. This year, next year, there will be a stakes schedule. The Arlington Million, I believe, is going to be renamed for Arlington Chairman Emeritus Richard Duchossois. I also am not sure that it's going to be $1 million. That remains to be seen, just how they allocate these funds for purses. I mean, for stakes purses, excuse me.
Well, interesting. All right. It's, you know, it's a distressing, just the way, you know, we've talked about it all through, really all through the pandemic. It was a kind of a sidebar story, and it just upsets everybody whenever it comes up. So I did want to ask because it's always exciting when you live tweet those meetings.
Oh, that's not me. That's Nicole Newlist, who is at Rogue Clown.
Right.
And Nicole is I don't know how she does it. She managed to get every single piece of information. I mean, I could not do what she does. She's absolutely amazing. If you're going to follow live tweeting, I mean, I try to give more synopsis sorts of bookings and hit the important points, but Nicole is getting all of it. So if you want the comprehensive view, I definitely recommend having Nicole's Twitter open.
Yeah, Marcus, also, I noted that you'd done a little advance on today's Rockfell at Newmarket, and right? That Fastnet Rock Filly did not run well.
Looked like she displaced or something. She stopped.
Okay.
I didn't think it was much of a race, to be honest, and neither is the Winning You're In Tomorrow, the Royal Lodge. Just five horses and not anyone that really catches one's eye as possibly, especially high class. But it's all two. Main focus is 2-year-olds this week at Newmarket. The pair of great Group Ones tomorrow, the 6 furlong races, the Middle Park and the Sheasley Park for fillies. Those are interesting. You'll see horses coming out of there who connections think can get a mile in the Breeders' Cup races. And same, I mean, the Rockfell and the Royal Lodge often produce runners too. They're definitely worth keeping an eye on. But I would think that I don't know. We'll have to see what happens. It's just so early. I don't have a strong sense of how this is all going to work out with overseas horses coming here anyway. That to me is something that merits further investigation.
And I, in considering how much of the European Breeders' Cup groupings you focus on, this has come up repeatedly the last several weeks. Do we have much of a feel yet for how much participation there's going to be, Marcus?
Well, listen, when I see people talking about it, overseas trainers, they don't qualify it with, if X happens and Y is possible. It seems to be framed in the sense of it's going to happen. And I was told about something called something sportsman's exemption that circumvent the general travel rules governing international travel into this country. I think if I understand that correctly, that's going to moot the issues of will people be allowed to come. And I think it's people more than horses. So, I mean, one of the major questions to me is if the United States' status and the global stage is the place where coronavirus still is circulating so widely, if that persists into November, and we're so close now, it's hard to imagine otherwise, how will that affect people coming back home? Like, is there going to be more of a problem with coming back from having been in the States, and how is that going to work with quarantine and the logistics of that? And I don't know. I was, something that I've been planning to look into, or have suggested to my editors that the Racing Forum should look into generally. And I know that we're going to learn more about it in the next few weeks. But my presumption right now is it's still on, just because of what I know about that particular rule and how European horse people seem to be talking about it. But I don't know that anything, that the specifics are, I think it's maybe TBD, in part because of fluidity.
Sure. Oh, I'm glad I asked. The sportsman's exemption. All right. That's the first time I've heard the term. And obviously there's some divisions that are going to need some European participation to ratchet up the intrigue and competitiveness.
I think you could say that.
Always great. Marcus Hirsch, everybody. DRF Hirsch on your Twitter machine. Marcus, good luck this weekend. I appreciate it.
All right. You too.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody. Let's take a break. Last of the morning and a real quick one, so that makes it easy for Case to break it up and send it out on pod and in the archives and everything else. We'll finish up 45, 50 minutes with Hammer, James Scully, and Mike Welsh. There you go. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA-breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Serious X.